What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody.
And we are back for episode 86 of the podcast. Every time I say the number, I'm like, man, we've lasted this long. It's pretty awesome. Because honestly, outside of one other, I think I've been in a part of a bunch of podcasts. Yeah. You don't really last that long. People kind of get tired of it, and it's like it's a commitment, and it's this whole thing. And so I'm happy that we've gotten to episode 86 and done some really cool things. Speaking of cool things and announcements, we actually have a special guest this week, none other than Destiny Jackson. How you doing today?
Hi, thank you guys for having me on. I'm doing pretty well. I'm caffeinated, I'm hydrated, you know, I'm ready to talk all the nerd things happening in the world.
That is what's up. That is what's up. I am happy to have you on. I've seen a lot of your work, the things that you tweeted on Twitter, and all the behind the scenes access stuff you've been doing as of late. And I'm always interested. One, because I follow I try to follow a lot of Black writers that I think are dope. But then it's also really cool to kind of have a conversation and be like, oh, you know, you're interested in the same things I'm interested in, or you know, you have a a unique perspective that I think is really cool. So I was like, yo, this would be dope to kind of get you on the podcast. And I've been trying to, and when I say trying, I don't mean trying as in like hitting you up in your DMs. I've been trying to schedule like when we would have certain guests, because I wanted to kind of make sense based on their personality and the things that they like. And I think this was like the perfect time to set this up. And so we would definitely appreciate you jumping on. And before we get into today's topics, though, we kind of wanted to talk about our week. For me, it's been pretty dope. Beyond just like sending out pitches and getting accepted and all this other stuff, we got to see a lot of gaming stuff. Like, for instance, today we had the Summer of Game Fest startup, and we had I don't want to say too many reveals, but we had a lot of cool games announced and shown off. And it seems like survival horror is like what it is this year. Like, there was a lot of survival horror games, and being a big fan of that genre, I'm like, oh, I'm about to eat. Like, this is what's up. Like, I am excited. I know, like, last year I think it was like vampires and stuff. So like, there's a horror motif going around, but I think that this year, considering there isn't many, I guess, like AAA games outside of the norm, it's like, oh, this is really cool to have another survival horror game or another single player game that I can really sink my teeth into that looks like it was made for me. Also, we got a release date for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder Revenge game. Being a beat 'em up fan, I'm like, yo, this is fire. And Casey Jones is going to be playable. Like, I think this is the first game, one of the first games that you could play as all the Turtles, April O'Neil, Splinter, and Casey Jones. That's freaking awesome. And it's six-player cooperative mode. I'm not a fan of them dropping it next week. I think they should have given me more time. But beyond that, I'm really excited about it coming out. It's also coming to the Game Pass. So if anybody has the Game Pass, you get it for free. I'm doing, like, air quotes, free. But you get to play it for free. So, yeah, just a lot of cool stuff being announced. I also got to catch up on some streamed content, watching was Obi-Wan Kenobi, watching, I finished Stranger Things, and what else did I watch? I can't remember. It's a blur. Like, Netflix has so much crap that it's hard to keep up with everything, even when I watched it. but I did get to catch up on a lot of stuff and had a pretty good week so far. Tess, what about you?
I just unsubscribed from the Kendra G show. it's just something that I was watching because it was extremely comical for me at first. I started watching it like on Instagram because, you know, she does these lives where she has like a dating show, and it was just funny because it was mostly, you know, like the dregs of society going on there. And it was just bad, but it was comical because, you know, if you were smart enough to not be part of this hot poppin' mess, you know, you could be entertained by like the ratchetest of ratchet going on there and just being absolutely just bad.
So it's a wreck, like the real world type stuff.
It's really bad. I mean, there are so many examples. There was this one lady the other day who got on, you know, you're supposed to go on the show and you get asked a bunch of like, you know, dating questions, how old you are, what you're looking for, you know, how long have you been single, X, you know, all these things. And, you know, why would somebody want to date you, X, Y, and Z? This woman went on the show with a whole husband in another room.
Wait. Pause. Wait a minute.
I paused.
What?
I paused.
She had like a complete husband, like no batteries included type. Like she had them together.
Like a real flesh and blood husband wearing a ring who had no idea she was on the show, apparently.
Wow. Like, see, I was going to say, was it like an open relationship type of thing?
Or? No. He had no idea.
Are they into polygamy? Like.
No, I mean, there was another guy who was into polyamory. Unfortunately, he didn't seem to understand the definition of polyamory. I was extremely disappointed. I was like, where's the education here?
Get back to the woman with the husband.
So yeah, so she, so apparently she's sitting there and she's not in light. Like Kendra's asking her to get in better lighting. And then she's like, is there anywhere else in your house you can go? She goes, can you go to the bathroom? She goes, no, my kids are in the bathroom. So my red flag went up. I'm like, how many kids you got in the bathroom? Like, what are they doing? Are they taking a bath? Yeah. Who's not watching them?
Right.
And then she's like, because at first the girl has said she lived alone. And then she's like, oh, my kids are in the bathroom. She goes, oh, you live with your kids? Yeah, I have kids. She's like, okay, how old are they? Da, da. And then she said, you know, why aren't you with the youngest child's father or whatever? And then she's like, ends up kind of like explaining, and then she basically admits she's still married. And she's like, wait, why are you on my dating show if you're married? She's like, well, we're in the process of getting a divorce. She's like, are you legally separated yet? No, we're not, but you know, I got a lawyer. Girl, that's not how this works. It's not.
You trying to set up your fallback plan. You know what? I might have to stand a little bit. I might have to stand just a little bit on that. She said, you know, what's that phrase that the people are saying? I'm not the stepdad. I'm the father who stepped up or something, whatever.
Oh,
that
people gotta stop. And got us. So she was trash to me. And then there's this other girl who was driving. She's a truck driver. And I was, oh my God, Kendra's like, you can't drive while we're on the show. Like, anyway, the girl gets to a truck stop. She was a hot mess. But she was explaining how she's not with her ex anymore. And she was like, yeah, my ex left me for a crackhead. I was like, okay, God, where's the channel changer? Like, where's the remote control?
We have to delve into that. Because what did she have that you didn't have? I assume nothing of value. Like
nothing of value. But the woman, her and her man, used to be crack dealers. And then he left his woman for a client.
All right, Destiny. Ooh. So, how is your week? Because what?
Yeah, how do I follow that? Oh my God, I wish. Damn, I didn't sell any crack this week. I wish, though, in hindsight, that I did, so I could at least, you know, add to the conversation. if the cops are listening, I'm just kidding. Yeah, man, what have I been doing this week? Kind of similar to you. I was keeping up a little bit on the Summer Game Fest news. It was the year of the tall vampire lady, you know, last year, maybe the year before. I do remember the mommies from Resident Evil Village. That was fun. That was a good little trip down memory lane when you said that. But this week I'm super excited for The Quarry because I was a huge fan of Until Dawn. That game scared the hell out of me, so I'm really excited to be scared by The Quarry. Reviews so far are pretty good. There's a couple of complaints here and there, but nothing that would hinder me from buying it at full price. Because sometimes, you know, some games you're like, okay, let me wait, you know, a little bit. Right. But The Quarry seems like it might be worth the $60. So we'll see about that. I still got one more day to contemplate it. but the rest of the time I've basically been trying to keep up with like what's going on with the Emmys talk. I am a television entertainment journalist primarily. I am doing a little bit more film coverage here and there, but my bread and butter is television. So I've been catching up on a ton of TV. So like you, I watch Stranger Things and Under the Banner of Heaven, you know. I need to watch Abbott Elementary next. I've been watching Black Lady Sketch Show. I've been watching, I mean, anything you can watch, I watched it. Right. I watched Jurassic World already, and just all the things. So that's basically what I've been up to. I recently had to sit back and watch a bunch of Godzilla movies, so that's been kind of interesting.
Oh, word.
Because Godzilla is such a classic, but you know, I've never been into the monster mash, as it were. But yeah, so I'm trying to get a new appreciation for, you know, Godzilla for whatever that's reason. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Just watching a bunch of freaking... I wish people would stop making TV. Like, just let us catch up. Like, stop for a right? year. Let us rest. And then, like, come back with television. Let everybody rest.
Like, yeah, facts. Because, like, I see Netflix, and they had their, you know, their Geeked, you know, event. And I just, like, there's so many... And it wouldn't be a thing if it was, like, the stuff I didn't want to see. Like, if it was a bunch of stuff, I'm like, ah, that's not for me. Cool. No. There was so much horror, so much sci-fi, so much, like, over-the-top stuff that I probably would watch regardless.
Yeah.
That I'm like, fam. Like, every week? Every week.
Yeah. I'm excited, like, for Wednesday. And I, you know, disclosure, I used to work for Netflix, so I've seen Sandman, you know? And I think that one's going to be popular. I'm super excited for Wednesday. And, there's, I think, the Midnight Club, which is something from Mike Flanagan, who did, for those who don't know, the House of, oh my God, the Haunting of Hill House.
Yes, yes.
Midnight Mass and Bly Manor and all that. But anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep up with. And there's even shows that from like last year or the year before that I'm like, oh, right, I was supposed to watch that for a whole thing and totally forgot. We even spoke about it here. I think it was like at least 20 episodes ago, we were talking about how we were going to watch The Witcher and talk about it. I legit just finished The Witcher like 2 weeks ago because it was just too much content. And that's just on Netflix. We're not talking about HBO Max and all these other places. Mm-hmm. And it's great in a sense that we'll always have something to talk about. But at the same time, it's like, it's just exhausting. Like, just so much.
It's so exhausting. It's so exhausting trying to keep up. And then there's the things that you don't see because they get lost in the fray of all the things that are being released, you know? So it's like, God, how do we give people their flowers if there's too many flowers, you know?
Exactly.
So,
Things get swallowed up way too quick. With that being said, you know, in terms of giving people their flowers, what are some of the things that you've been doing in terms of, you know, your career? Like, people who might not know of you or, you know, in these spaces, I know you were working with Netflix at one time. Can you talk about any of those things?
Yeah. So essentially what I do is I'm an entertainment journalist, and I do freelance mostly nowadays. For those of you who haven't heard, Netflix did the big chop. I am not with them. But I used to work with Disney, and I work for other places. So I freelance from time to time for different companies. Right now I'm freelancing for the Academy, who does the Oscars. And I freelance for Script Magazine and a couple other places. But I think that, if I'm not too rambly, I think I remembered the question, like, how do I keep up with things? Or, like, how do I kind of stay afloat, right? Or like kind of just, I don't know, man. I wish I had some good advice. I think the best thing to do, if anyone else wants to be like in this industry, you really do have to keep up with like what is going on. So I mean, I'm a huge fan of reading. I'm probably the only person under 60 who still reads the actual newspaper. I have a subscription to LA Times and a couple other magazines and things like that, like to get hard copies of them. But I think that's really important, and that keeps me in the loop. So even if I don't have to, say I have to interview somebody about the show Insecure. I have watched Insecure, but in this fake scenario, let's pretend I've only seen like a couple of episodes from like the second season and the show is over. reading magazines and newspapers sometimes, if they're like talking about that, kind of helps you fill in the gaps. So I feel like that's like a little bit of a good like kicker. Like if you're very confused, like, oh my God, how can I keep up with all this television? How can I keep up with all these movies? Reading is fundamental. Okay. Reading is key.
Nice.
And you learn how to be a better writer too by reading that way. But I mean, my life is pretty crazy. I have a planner. And I just, you know, write down like, oh my gosh, I have an interview this day, I interview that day. But also, I think one of the toughest things, and again, thank you guys for letting me be on your podcast and kind of what you were speaking about in the intro earlier about, you know, Black journalists or, you know, people of color in general journalists. It's also really hard to stay in this industry because it's still a white dominated field.
Right.
It's getting better. You know, like a good example would be the Miss Marvel stuff. I've seen a lot of news organizations come together and say, we have South Asian journalists covering this show, because that show is very specific to the South Asian community and the Muslim community and all that. Right. But that doesn't mean like a white person is not going to be able to write a review for something. But, you know, it's gotten a little bit better. But there's still work to be done. And one of the things that I face often is when I show up to these events, like I went to a screening event for a movie I can't say yet at Sony, and I showed up and they were like, oh, like, are you lost? You know, like, are you supposed to be here? You know, and it's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here. Thanks, you know, because most of the time they're white. I went to this small viewing. There was literally less than 15 people there, and I was the only Black person in there. Not only the only Black person, but the only Black woman. It was primarily males, all white, mostly white males. There was two females. They were white, you know, so that's kind of the situation that you have to just be prepared for. You're going to have some challenges. Anyway, that's for anybody who wants to do like the journalism stuff. So that, did that answer your question? I don't know, but I'll stop talking now.
No, it's great. And because that actually reminded me of a story from Cannes, the Films Festival, where I forgot her name. And please forgive
Valerie.
Me. There you go.
Yeah, no, Valerie. Valerie's a journalist for Deadline. She's a Black queer writer. I think she identifies as queer, I'm pretty sure. And she went to Cannes and experienced a lot of discrimination there. And so did Clayton Davis from Variety. But anyway, as you were saying.
Yeah. And I saw those and I retweeted them and I was like, it sucks. And on my side, it hasn't been so much of, I did have an interesting story with E3. When we went to E3 the second time, this was years ago. And I was for my site, the editor in chief. And so I had a bunch of people with me and my job was like, outside of making sure we all covered the things we were supposed to cover, was to get everyone home safely, because I was the oldest. And when we get through, we're going to like board our plane or whatever, you know, they do like the check where you have to like take off your shoes and stuff like that. One of our writers was checked over and over and over, and then they brought her to like a back room to like kind of do like a strip thing, because they were like, she kept, I guess, setting off the alarms. But she has like a lot of piercings and things of nature. But the way that they were talking and moving and acting around her, I'm like, she is like tiny. She doesn't have a, like, I don't know what type of threat you think she's going to be. But, and mind you, like most of the writers at that time were people of color and she was Black. And my white writers had no problem, like no problem going through, and no one stopped them or whatever to like double check their stuff, even though like the alarm was going off. But she was like, you know, taken and pulled and was like, we waited almost an hour for her to get fully checked just to get through so we can get onto the plane.
And that is just so foolish. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. And that's what I was saying. Like, it seems like it doesn't, it's changing, but like really small baby steps. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's good to like be able to highlight, because one of the things that we're going to move into our first topic, the power of Twitter. The power of Twitter, because Twitter has allowed me and a bunch of people I know to have get a boost in our careers because of Twitter. Even though Twitter can be a vile place, like extremely toxic, at the same time, it allows us to have a voice. It allows us to kind of share ideas, share our work, and basically put ourselves out there a little bit more than other places. And because of that, we are able to do the things that we can do a little bit easier. But it's tough. It is still tough. And one example I have, this is something that was recent when I got my blue check, how people were, and not necessarily towards me, but just in general, when Twitter announced that they were doing the whole, you know, check thing again, where you can actually submit your information, a lot of people were like, you know, blue check doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. And I was like, you know what, in terms of who the person is, totally. Like, you're not a better person because you have a blue check. However, I have had problems where I had been known in the industry for a long time, and I have contacts through all, like, I got video games from Rockstar, and, like, for people who know, like, Rockstar isn't the easiest people to get video games from. And I still, like, when I went to get a game from an indie dev, they were like, I need you to message me from your Twitter to make sure you're you. And so that's never happened for other people, though. I just had to give them my email, explain who I was, show them my site, and everything was good. This person, I had to jump through hoops to kind of get them to send a code. And it was like for an indie game, as opposed to a AAA monster, right? And so for me, having the blue check was like a huge, like, oh, Kenny actually does what he says he does. And it's helped me tremendously over this short period of time. It's ridiculous how much that little check, you know, people think I'm more legit. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of all the, you know, I've interviewed, before I had the blue check, I interviewed Margot Robbie, Douglas Booth. I've written for major sites like IGN. I've done a whole lot of stuff. I've been doing this for over 16 years. But it wasn't until the blue check that certain people started, like, noticing, even though I've been around them. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, it could be rough. On the flip side, Twitter can also be just weird. For instance, Morbius. For whatever reason, Sony thought it would be a good idea to bring Morbius back to theaters after all of the memes and everything that was going on Twitter. And apparently it flopped again. Yeah, I think it made around 300K at the theaters, and which makes its total domestic like 74 million, which is really, 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 really bad. And I'm curious to what was the idea going in with this? I can't imagine that Sony thought that people loved Morbius so much that they were making these memes, making fun of it. I'm a little confused about that. But yeah, apparently that's what they thought.
I wonder, like, you know, I have to believe, okay, so like when Cats bombed, right, a lot.
Yeah.
I remember if they re-released it, but they did something because they had to change the I think they had to change the graphics or something on it. So I think it
visually,
like in a visual, like they were like, oh no, like we're going to change this a little bit. And then it made more money because people were then seeing it out of like just pure chaos reasons, right?
Right.
Like down by me in LA, we have this theater chain which is across the country, Alamo Drafthouse. I shouldn't say like it's just LA, but it's not. It's everywhere. We literally just got Alamo Drafthouse here, and it's been in Texas and New York forever. But anyway, they had sing-alongs. They literally had the sing-along screenings, and they were packed to the brim with people. And so I'm wondering if they thought like, oh, but like Cats did like a re-release and people didn't really, you know, like that. And it was like kind of getting like funny traction on social media. Like maybe it'll make some money. That's the only thing I can think of. Cause they'd be really crazy. Like to think that we thought that, you know, Morbius should be re-released. You know what I mean? Like I really would hope that they just were trying to be in on the joke, and unfortunately the joke backfired twice. It is not Morbin time. It is the opposite of Morbin time. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I have no idea, because I don't know anything about this movie except that Jared Leto's in it. And I think that actually says a lot, because I know nothing about this movie. I mean, I've got nothing. I know all kinds of things about Spider-Man, and I still haven't even seen it. But I know nothing about Morbius. So to me, that the flopping makes sense.
The floppening. Sony is such an is so interesting in their approach to this superhero business, because obviously Disney owns the good chunk of good Marvel, right?
Right.
But they've made hella profit off of those characters that are just silly. Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, right? They really turned those characters into something that we now care about, right? Mm-hmm. But Sony just cannot figure out what the hell they're doing without Disney's help. They really lucked out with the Spider-Verse films, and they know that. They know that because it makes them hella money, but that's because they've got Phil Lord and Chris Miller writing those scripts, and you know, they only work with like the best of the best. They know how to bring like comedy, they know how to bring heart. So that they got really lucky there. But with all the other stuff, you know, the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, you know, the third Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, and then Venom, right? Venom is kind of making them some money, right? But it's not the best. And they got lucky with the Tom Holland ones as well. But for whatever reason, they can't stick the landing on their own. And I don't know what the deal is with that. They're pulling, we got Bad Bunny as some character called El Muerto. Like, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, but I couldn't tell you who El Muerto was because he's only in, I think, two comics. So it's like, you guys are really, and then Morbius too, like, you guys are really pulling these characters and not really just doing anything. We got Kraven. Kraven hopefully is good, but I'm just so concerned about they are making these villains into characters that, you know, they want them to be relatable and have humanity because they want to make franchises, but then they don't connect to Spider-Man, and it's so asinine. Like, it's just the craziest situation you could have. It's like, where's Spider-Man at? Like, so you just got all these villains running out here unchecked. Like, that's just so wild, you know?
And not everybody can be Loki.
Right. And, you know, and that's a good example of like a villain that has been humanized, you know, that's really good. And I'm just wondering, like, Morbius had the vulture connection, right? But it's like Tom Holland, they don't know Tom Holland. So whose universe does he belong to? He could belong to Andrew's. That would make the most sense because Toby is not coming back. But like, guys. Anyway, sorry, I had to get that off my chest, man, because that is so upsetting. I don't know what the hell they're doing with Morbius.
You know, it's one of those things where I think on paper it's a good idea, because you have the fact that they were able to jump into these different universes, and it's like, okay, well, Sony's only going to continue to make movies because doing so furthers their contract. That I don't know why. I know why Marvel did it when they did it, but it was a bad contract to sign, where they can just, as long as they keep making Spider-Man films, they keep the contract. And so Sony is like, look, we got these properties, we're going to use them, which is cool. But if you align yourself with Marvel and have this, because we have the multiverse now, you have the ability to kind of tiptoe around these things and make some interesting stuff that isn't 100% tied to the MCU, which is good because you can tell your own stories. But then at the same time, you can pull characters from the MCU. You can share. And in doing so, because Spider-Man is huge right now, you make money off of the adjacent stuff. It's a totally good thing, like, for them to have set up. But they are like really not doing anything with it. And I think the Venoms were good because they were like comedies. They were like dark comedies, and they work. But eventually you're going to need Spider-Man or something that's going to hold that universe together. It could be Venom, but for right now, it's just not at that point, because not many people, they didn't do what they did with Iron Man, with what Marvel did with Iron Man, to where Iron Man was so good that it's like, okay, I want to see what else Iron Man does, regardless if we don't see the Hulk or Captain America, whatever the case may be, because like it was good. Venom hasn't gotten to that point yet. And apparently, because I haven't seen Morbius yet, I want to rent it. They won't let me. It's just apparently it's like really, really bad. And the thing is, Morbius could be good. He could be good. He could be a springboard for so many things. He's the reason that Blade has his powers. You know, he has some really cool stories with Spider-Man. If they would pull from the comic more, I think we could have gotten something. But for whatever reason, outside of like a really dope spin on the Lost Boys theme, apparently it didn't do anything. So then we get all these memes making fun of it, and it's like, wow, like Twitter has this weird magical hold on things for some reason. Because I remember this happening with, you know, we saw what happened with Sonic, where Sonic came out, and this is for the better. Sonic looked really bad, and Twitter went off. And then we got a better looking Sonic, and it worked out. The movie did well, and we got a sequel. We saw this in gaming with Mass Effect 3 when it got the new ending, when fans were upset. We also got the Snyder version of Justice League. So things happen with Twitter. There's some power there. But good grief, it has to be wielded with responsibility. Like, you can't just do these things
because these movies.
Yeah. I write a little bit. Nice.
I mean, yeah, it is a very powerful tool, and it sucks that we all have to suffer through weeks of discourse in order to get what we want, right? You know? But yeah, I mean, even Halo, right? Halo, whatever the latest Halo was looking kind of funky.
Oh, Infinite.
Too.
Yeah.
And they kind of, you know, pushed that back. They're like, all right, we'll work on it a little more. but yeah, man, Twitter is such a powerful tool. And I think it's better than it is worse. Definitely Twitter is a cesspool, but yes. I think it does have great impact because these brands are out here getting smoked. And if it was me, like, I would definitely be like, let's figure out how, like, you know, we don't get dragged through the mud for, like, you know, 3 weeks.
Facts. The next topic we want to talk about is Super Nintendo World. It might as well be Mario because it's Mario for real. But right. Super Nintendo World is coming to the U.S., is coming to Universal Studios Hollywood in 2023. And for people who don't know, it originally opened, or the first one opened in Japan, Universal Studios Japan, last year. Mm-hmm. It had everything from special rides to mushroom-inspired food, which means I wasn't going to be eating any of it, being allergic. It had cool interactive areas.
It's really sad.
Theme, shopping experience. I know, right? Like, especially with my wife and her love of mushrooms, it's like, oh, it's not fair.
Yeah,
it's
what
fair
a random thing to be allergic to. My God.
Right?
So sorry.
How not are you cool. allergic to fungus? Like, fungus, there's a whole documentary about fungus on Netflix.
I'm like one of the 5% of people on the planet that is allergic.
Like, at least mushroom isn't in everything. You know what I mean? So, like, right. at least you're not, like, being hampered by, like, oh, if you were allergic to, like, you know, if you were lactose intolerant or something. But you
Which
can avoid mushroom pretty easy. Yeah, see, lactose intolerance, that's, oof.
I think anyway. That's anybody over 30, to be honest. I ain't even gonna hold you. Like,
you know
I feel
what?
Like...
Don't put that on me, okay? Because both of my parents are lactose intolerant, and I'm not there yet. I think I force my body into submission. Like, I drink so much milk and cheese and all the things. And so hopefully, don't put that on me, Ricky Bobby. Okay.
Oh, gosh. No, no, I'm good with, like, cheese, but, like, milk and, like, ice cream. Like, I had, because for people who know, I'm on a diet. And mm-hmm. I had, so one of my cheat days, I had a milkshake. And it was the wrong thing to do. It was so wrong. Yeah. Such a wrong thing. It was worth it on the low, but it wasn't. But yeah, so like
mushrooms at Mario Town, I'll call it.
It's pretty awesome. And I think that the themed experiences, the themed areas that they have is really cool. It's basically Disneyland for people who love Nintendo. And I'm like really stoked about it because I was like, I have to get over to Japan somehow. But with COVID, that ain't happening, right? And so I was like, dog, like, how do I do? And so they're like, bringing it over here is great. My issue, though, is that COVID is still a thing. And I think that people aren't, you know, with the U.S., we are such a weird group of people sometimes. And we just pretend that everything is okay. And, you know, it's summer, you know, hot girl summer again. We're going to go out. We're going to do all this other stuff. And people are still dying from COVID. Like, it's still a thing. And it's mutating now. We're like the X-Men on the low. And I'm trying to like avoid certain things. Like even going to the movies, I'm like, okay, what theater I know isn't that popular? Or what time of day can I go where I know there's not going to be anybody there? You know, I'm going to wait weeks or whatever the case. I think the last one that I went that was actually like a lot of people were going was to see Doctor Strange because I didn't want it spoiled. And I made sure I went to a Cinebistro because there's no kids allowed. And the seats are, there's a decent space between the seats. And there was very few people there. And I was so happy. So happy. But beyond that, I'm like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. Bob's Burgers, when I went to see that, nobody was there. So I was like, yes. But yeah, thinking about going to a theme park, especially one where I could potentially take my kids, I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's a little too early for that. You know what I'm saying? Granted, we don't know exactly what, you know, how the world is going to be looking in 2023 when it opens, because right now they are, you know, building everything at the moment. They haven't actually finished and it's going to open later. But we don't know what month, you know, maybe COVID is a little bit better. I don't know. But as of right now, I'm just kind of like giving it the stink eye. Like, I don't know. I don't know, fam. I don't know if I'm going.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just in total agreement. I barely go anywhere as it is now. I mean, we all know that I have health issues, but yeah, I'm not going to no crowded places. I just saw on YouTube, like some concert. I don't even know who was performing, but I'm like, y'all are really close to each other. And that's just disgusting. Not only is there COVID, there's monkeypox. Y'all are idiots.
She said 6 feet, please.
Please make it 12.
Okay, keep it, okay? Keep your monkeypox, okay? Your zebra pox, all of them. Chickens and monkeys out here ready to get us. I think the only solution for that is to really go during the off season and just to wear your mask outside. We are in a very strange situation. I definitely suffer from long COVID situations, so I absolutely take COVID seriously. I wear my mask all the time. This is how serious I am. I literally met Andrew Garfield and took a picture with him, and I kept my mask on. I should have taken it off, and Andrew is probably the only man I would take my mask off for and risk it all for. But for whatever reason, like, I'm so ingrained in wearing my mask at all times that it just was second nature to me. And, you know, I look at the picture and I'm like, damn, like, what would a world look like if we weren't in COVID and, like, you know, like, we could just do whatever, you know, just in normal circumstances. I'm like, oh, my God, like, if, you know, if we lived in an alternative universe where none of this happened, like, things would just be so normal. And sometimes I think about that, too, because, like, you know, you have kids and I just think about, like, oh, my gosh, we're going to have to explain to kids, like, how the world used to work before COVID, you know what I mean? Like, things just used to be so different. Yeah, it's like we have really changed. I think we are just really sitting in this, and it, for some people, it has not sunk in how serious this situation is. So I totally feel that. But with that said, you know, I'm waiting on the fourth through 1 millionth booster to be announced so we can go get that. And I think, yeah, like, you've been taking the precautions at the theaters. I've been taking the precautions. I think that's the only way you can do it, is really, like, go to a not popular theater, try to figure out what time of day. For the theme park, I would like to go, but I know, because Universal's not that far from me, so I know that when I go, I only go to theme parks in the off season. And by that, I mean, I literally only go to theme parks in February or October. Any other time, you can miss me on that, because February and shit going on in October. Sure, there's Halloween time, but I will go early in October, you know, before all this stuff pops off. So catch me in the off season, sis. So I will, you know, I want to go support Mario. I'm really hoping that they'll have some kind of a Mario Party illusion or something. Maybe we can tap something and it goes chance time, you know, something like that, right? So I'm really, really excited to see what they turn it into. For sure.
Yeah, the areas that were, you know, that I saw, like, you could go and, like, hit, like, a block, and the block would, like, it would make something appear, and, like, the item would kind of, like, float down towards you, like you're in the game. Like, just stuff like that was just really cool. And granted, I'm probably too old to be super excited about that stuff, but at the same time, I'm like, this is amazing. I never thought I would go to a theme park that was, like, Nintendo inspired, because that's not something that we do over here. Like, Universal has, you know, the main stuff, you know, like, film-based stuff, you know, Star Wars, any of their films, obviously. And stuff like that. But as far as video game stuff, we don't really have that. We don't really have unique, you know, the closest thing I could think of is, like, going to a conference, going to E3, where there's like giant stuff you could take pictures with. Beyond that, there really isn't anything here where we can do that. So I think that's really cool. I just think the timing of it is a little rough. And I get it. They invested all this money. They want to open it. But yeah.
Yeah, Avengers Campus at Disneyland got pushed back because of COVID reasons.
Yep.
And it had to open up a whole year after it was supposed to launch. And it was pretty low attended for a little bit. And then, you know, people started going. And that was still like in the height of the pandemic. I think we had the vaccine, like that was had to be March 2021 or so for the vaccine. So okay. Then it opened up like July or May or something like that. So it was just after the vaccines came. But yeah, man, I totally feel you on that. I feel you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need, nope. And especially with the idea of long COVID and yeah. Man, I do hope it gets better. Unfortunately, I do feel like COVID is here to stay in some capacity. And it's one of those things where there's going to be the new norm, not to the point where we're still wearing masks all the time, but to the point where, okay, you've gotten COVID. This is a serious thing. Let's go, you know, A, B, or C. But it's not going to like just evaporate into nothingness. I don't think so. Especially with older diseases coming back, which is crazy because the thought of me getting COVID, I haven't even gotten chickenpox yet. So like
your whole life,
right? Like
You never got vaccinated?
You know what? I don't know, to be honest.
Maybe you got vaccinated because you should have gotten it by now.
No, I didn't. I haven't gotten it. Yeah, I haven't gotten chickenpox either, but I know I got vaccinated as a little churin.
Yeah. There's just no way. It's so contagious that you should have even gotten it as an adult. If you hadn't been vaccinated, you would have gotten it from some slimy, grimy child because they're all slimy and grimy. Your kids are cute. Kids are slimy and grimy.
And oh my gosh. You know, the kids getting lice, you know, in the school.
Yeah.
And that's the one time where it's like, that's good racism, right? Is that lice don't like black hair. And I'm like, wow, that's like a great benefit.
I do know of three black kids who did get lice, but they're the only ones I know of, but they were in a really, really bad situation prior. Okay. And it kind of made sense that they got it. Like, everyone would have gotten lice in that situation.
Okay.
And so they did get it, and you know, they're not in that situation anymore. They're fine now. They're happy and healthy. But that's the only time in this world that I've known of any black children getting lice.
And now I know them. But yeah, I want to meet Peach. I want to meet Wario, and they better have my boy Ghost Luigi. Okay, Guigi. Right. They better have Guigi out for Halloween time. If they don't have Luigi's Mansion, I might have to write a letter to whoever's in charge of Universal. I don't know who would. Mr. Universal.
You should write a letter.
Mr. Spielberg. Okay. Mr. I'm going to be there.
Or whoever is handling it. Because they did say that they're going to have special attractions for Luigi, Mario, and Peach. And I think a few other people. I know they have the Toadstool Diner. But they're supposed to be, and I don't know if it's Luigi's Mansion, but that would make sense. That would be awesome for Halloween.
Yeah,
or just totally. Period. That would be great.
Like,
I wonder if there's going to be just like Koopa Troopas just walking around.
Ooh, a little Koopa.
I mean, could you imagine like a Lakitu? That would be so cool if there was a Lakitu just like dropping toys out of the sky.
That would be.
I mean, that would be dangerous.
I want to see Peach and Rosalina like have a fight, like
that'd be nice.
You know, like a theater where they just fight over.
Yeah.
Just start scrapping like for no reason.
Every 15 minutes, yeah.
Like the medieval times, that would be really cool, and like people are riding Yoshi and stuff.
Oh yeah, they gotta have so instead of the carousel, we have to have Yoshis, and they have to have Mario Kart bumper cars. That just makes sense.
I love that. Yeah.
That just makes sense. I need them to get something.
Hire us, Universal.
Facts. We have a lot of good ideas. First of all, I need you to have some food that isn't mushroom-based. Just a little bit. Just on the side. Mark it for Kenny. And then we good. We good at you. You know what I'm saying?
Just specifically for Kenny, too. All Kenny's.
Right.
We need an all Kenny's menu.
I saw the when they did the reveal for the Japan one, and it was literally everything had mushrooms in it, except for the drinks. And I was like, fam, like, trying to kill me out here.
I mean,
do we know if Universal Orlando is getting it at all?
They didn't say. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't. Outside of the Hollywood one not making enough money, I don't see why it wouldn't. It just makes sense. It just makes sense. But we'll see. They haven't, like I said, they haven't given us a month yet for next year. Yeah. And hopefully, I want to say the hopefully that the opening is good, but I do want people to be safe. So if you do go out there, keep your distance. Don't be touching people. You know what I'm saying? And you know, be good. Just
wear
your
mask. Be boosted.
Facts. Wear your mask. The next thing we wanted to talk about was Love, Death, and Robots, Volume 3. Recently dropped on Netflix. We talked about it a little bit prior on a different episode where we talked about the trailer and what we thought was going to be in it. Now we actually have gotten to watch the show, or, you know, the anthology or whatever it's called. And we have some thoughts. I really like it. And my only complaint is that it's always too short. And I say this was every season, that I feel like I want more. And not just more shorts, but just more of the shorts. Like, there's so much content, or just, like, you know, thematically, the ideas that they're running with that are really freaking cool. Like, one of my favorites was Night of the Mini Dead, because it was hilarious. And being a horror fan, a zombie fan, I was like, yo, this is great. This is bananas how fast everything went, and how tiny the little people, and how the zombies went from being regular zombies to mutated zombies and giant zombies, and how they had to nuke the planet and all this other stuff. It was really cool. And it was done in, like, I feel like 15 seconds. That's what I feel like. I know it was longer than that, but that's what it feels like. And most of the episodes feel like that. They feel like really, really quick little shorts. And that's what they're supposed to be. They're not supposed to be super long. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them, when they end, I just feel like I want more. And I guess that's the point, right? They want you wanting more so you'll come back. But damn it, no. I need more. Like, for instance, The Swarm was such a good episode, where these two scientists go and they try to essentially manipulate this, you know, sentient being, this hive-like being, to get them to work for them, to get them to kind of trick them like ants, like trick them, make the humans, or make them think that the humans are like the queen or whatever. And so they'll be forced to do their bidding. And the hive mind kind of knew this was going on, and mm-hmm. turned the tables on them in a dramatic way. And what you find out was that the subspecies, or the lower species that was already subservient to the hive, tried to do the same thing. And now they are being used. And so, essentially, the humans potentially could be the same way. And so I was like, dang, fam. Like, we got outdone by our own, you know, our own means, our own greed, or whatever the case it was, you know, would be. It turned bad.
Tis our destiny.
It is. It is, unfortunately. It is.
I want to be the heebie-jeebies, man. Like, with the bug. Oh, my God. That ending, too? Oh, no.
That was trippy. Trial.
Yeah. Like, I'm good on that.
But Tess, which one was your favorite?
I only watched Jabaro this season. Okay. So, and, mm-hmm. you know, there's so much to say about it, but honestly, I don't feel I don't want to say the energy, because all of the energy is used on just watching it. There really isn't anything to say. It's just fantastic. it's just extremely fantastic because of the movement. It's the movement. You know, the story isn't so different in from, you know, any kind of Song of a Siren type thing that you've may have learned in mythology or whatever. It's just the beautiful movements. I mean, those movements were so good. And you have to ask yourself what you're watching multiple times. It's just it was so amazing. It was just I just loved the movements. I loved the struggle, how they were the men, you know, the army is struggling so hard, and then they're just killing each other, and it's like, well, I mean, sucks to be y'all. And she's putting in all of her like Naruto learned ninjutsu. You know what I mean? Like she's doing the absolute most in that water. Her dancing is, it's ridiculous. It is so, you know, passionate and so like, even if she wasn't casting an actual spell with her voice, she would have still been able to lure people into the water just by her movement.
Right.
And, you know, obviously it's her jam to kill people. She's a siren. She's having a good time. And she's like, wait a minute. How come I can't kill this one? This is a problem. You know?
Yeah. Intrigued with one another was really interesting too. The fact that he couldn't hear.
Yeah.
And she was like, huh, you're different. You're not like the you know, the others.
Right.
And you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but unfortunately, it doesn't end well for either for either one of them. But it was really, it was a dance. It was a dance between two different people, and where a story is being told within. It's almost like a musical with no music, if you will.
Yeah, it's a sensory experience.
Yeah,
it's a sensory experience in multiple ways. The sounds, the movement. Mm-hmm. You know, and the emotion, right? The emotion, because nobody's talking, right? It's just literally like screams, screams, and I don't know, shouting, things like that.
It did freak me out with you know, the part on top of the waterfall, and I was like, this isn't going the way I thought it was going, and I didn't realize, you know, he was seeking her out because of, you know, for greedy reasons, and how that just kind of transpired. I was like, wow, this went from mythological, interesting dance to almost a horror flick with him, you know, like stripping the gold off and everything, and that being physically a part of her. But then, you know, things don't transpire, you know, what happens to him later on kind of justifies that, I guess. But I was like, wow, this is, I don't know what I'm looking at. But it's interesting. This is definitely an interesting, you know, episode. But I'm like, I'm really kind of confused at what's going on. Let me ask you guys, was that episode the final episode for you?
I think it is the final episode. I think that's what I thought. But I don't, like, when I was looking on, when I was scrolling, because I knew that was the one that I wanted to watch when I had time. I think it was the last one, but I don't know, because I also messed up first and second season. Like I thought I was watching the first season when I wasn't, because you know how when Netflix has like multiple seasons, it'll just continue down the list.
Yeah.
It's not like Hulu. Like Hulu, you have to actually switch over to the side and go into
Hulu
another season.
It's also very interesting because you're like, you'll be watching an episode of something and then it'll be like up next, like the show that you're not watching. And it's like, what are you doing? Like I'm watching, you know, like The Great, and then it'll be like,
love that show.
Up next, you know, it'll be Abbott Elementary. And it's like, what?
Right. And that's because somebody else is watching on your account. And so the Hulu can't figure out who's watching what. And it'll go to another episode.
It'll just,
literally
it'll just switch over.
And it switches.
The episode Jabaro is directed and written by Alberto Mieglo, who did The Windshield Wiper, who just got nominated, won for an Oscar, and then he did the Windshield, The Witness episode in, what, season two or something, the one about the two people stuck in a time loop and they're, like, murdering each other.
Right.
So I just want to ask him, is he okay? Yeah.
He's not. That's the thing.
Are you okay, sir?
He finds beauty in murder. And as long as he continues to put that in his art and it doesn't translate to reality, we're fine. We're okay.
Right.
He has a knack for it. I'll tell you that. He definitely has a knack for it. And
he's so different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's helping him in this regard.
I need to call him to direct my scene from The Demon King.
Oh, goodness.
Stop. Hey, I got a husband and wife who are trying to kill each other. He would be great.
He would. There might be a musical number in there somehow. The reason why I was asking, though, is because I know that Netflix did this before with the other seasons where they kind of scrambled the episodes for different people to kind of see if there was a different vibe or a different feel seeing certain episodes after one another. And so I was, that's why I was wondering if they actually did this time, because I wonder if that would change what we thought about it. For me, being that it was the last one after watching the others, I enjoyed it, but I also felt like they left me hanging a little bit because of how it ends suddenly. And it's one of those things where, like, I want to kind of go back to that world and I want to kind of see what else is there, like what else is happening. And just like, you know, some of the other episodes is like, oh, like I can't, like it's the end. But then the fact that it was the end of the entire thing, I was like, oh, wait, that's it? Come on, son, like you can't do that. And so I was wondering if, like, would I have felt that way if that was the first one? Would I have been like, oh, that's cool, and then like just went into the next episode and not really cared? Or would I, you know, would I still feel the same way? And it's an interesting aspect, because typically when they do those anthologies, it's done in a way, either there's an overarching story, so these episodes have to land in this order, or it's one of those things where, like, we want to take you through some highs and lows. So you have, like, maybe a bunch of, if it's a horror-based one, a lot of fast-moving, you know, quick kills, all this other stuff, and then maybe a slow thriller episode in the middle, and then back up, you know, there's peaks and valleys. Whereas Love, Death, and Robots, not so much. I feel like Love, Death, and Robots is kind of like, we just put this here. Let's see what happens if this goes here. That's what I feel like.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing I didn't think about when watching. I think one of my last ones was either Mini Dead or Three Robots Exit Strategies, which is the I think it's the only one that has a direct sequel, because the three robots show up in the first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I really liked. And we're also ignoring David Finch here, but his episode. But well, I'm assuming we'll get to that, right?
Yeah.
Bad Traveling. But yeah, I think my last one was the robots, I think was. And that was a good, like, I was like, oh, this is a nice, like, funny way to end on. Because if it wasn't Mini Dead before that, I think it had to be Jabaro.
Okay. And that works, because I think that the three robots will work in a sense, because it's the only one that has, it's like they're talking, but they're talking to us, even though they're having their own conversation. It's really a look at humanity and what we would be in the last days, if you will. And it's done in a way that's comical, because it makes fun of everyone in a good way. It makes fun of everyone. Yeah. The people who love their guns, the people who are, you know, rich influencers, or the people who are just dependent on tech, and then tech, like, turned against them, which was hilarious to me. But yeah, I can see that definitely having a different vibe being at the end versus the beginning. For me, it was like, oh, we about to go somewhere. Like, we're about to, I see what you're doing with the analyzing of humanity stuff. Let's get to it. And then for me, then the second episode was actually Bad Traveling. And that was interesting, to say the least. That was one of my favorites, and I think that it has more to do with the crew on the ship than it does to do with the giant crab monster or whatever the case.
Yeah.
Just because of their dynamic. When you see the main character, you think that he is, I don't want to say evil, but, you know, he's manipulative in a way, and he's out to save himself. But then over the course of the episode, you find out that he's trying to save a lot of people at the expense of his crew. And so...
Right. Does that make... I love the morality of this episode, I think, is what pulls me in. Because it's like, is he evil? Is he not evil? You know what I mean? Because it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, he... You know, spoilers, sorry, everybody. But yeah, he does decide to, like, you know, punish the crew because they want to sacrifice, you know, innocent lives on wherever that place was they tried to go, the island.
Right.
And he's just, you know, he ends up being like, nah, we're not going to do that. But yeah, like, what cost? The cost of his crew. So what does that make him?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I want to know what the turn was, because there's a point where the only reason he comes into power is because they force him down to speak to this entity that has taken over the ship. And the entity is like, hey, or the crab is like, hey, I need you to take me to this island because I'm going to devour all the humans there. And, you know, as long as you take me there, you won't die. And so you're like, oh, well, obviously he's going to strike up a deal because he wants to save himself. Plus, he feels a way about his crew for shoving him down there in the first place. Not necessarily his crew. They drew straws. And then the big guy who lost was like, you're going to go in my stead. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like, oh, that's a turn for him. But then the way he conducts the rest of the voyage, the way he conducts himself is like, huh, this is very interesting. He talks about how, you know, we can go to this island that's farther out, but there's no one there. So we can drop the crab off, lie to it, and it won't kill everybody. Or we can go to this nearby place that he wants to go, but there's innocent people there. And so he does like a vote. Let's vote on it anonymously. And everybody wants to go to the place where all the people are because they want to get there as soon as possible. Because what's happening is as the crab is down there, it's eating people. Like every so often they have to throw a body down there and they don't have a fridge full of bodies just chilling. So one of them has to take the plunge and he orchestrates things in a way that he's able to eventually kill off his crew and sacrifice them to the crab. So this whole time you're like, are you good? Are you bad? But then the crew is mad shady. So it's like, I don't know. Like, is this a group of pirates? Is this like, I want to like him. I do like him. But at the same time, I'm like, huh.
Well, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like an episode of Am I the Asshole? And this isn't your thing. This is an everybody sucks here situation.
Yes.
Am I the asshole? This crab is trying to eat everybody on my ship. I fed the captain to it. Am I the asshole?
Am I the asshole?
Yo, that is great. That's perfect, actually.
I would love that as a scenario.
That is perfect. And he does, I mean, in the end, I think he does come out as the good guy because he doesn't, even after his crew is demolished or whatever, he still sends the crab on his way in a different way. He doesn't take the crab to the island. So I think his motivations were always good because he could have been like, hey, I'm just going to feed you all these people. I'm going to go to this nearby island and I'm going to sail away and I'll be cool. But he didn't. So I think that if anything, I think he felt like the crew wasn't worthy of being saved because they all voted to go to the island. And so that put him on this track of like, I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to wait till you do something shady so I feel better about killing you. That's what I think it is. It's like, no, you know what?
That's great.
I'm like, you know what? Y'all are cool and all, but you did try to kill me in my sleep, so I'm going to shoot you in the face. It's not me. It's you. So, you know. I think another episode. Now, one of the episodes, while I liked everything, especially from a animation standpoint, because I being an art grad, I like art and animation and all that good stuff. But one of them, I'm trying to find the name. I think it was the very pulse of the machine. Where there's an astronaut, I guess two astronauts, one of them dies, and then like the planet itself is a living entity that I guess feeds off of people that come there or animals or whatever that comes there in order to grow its consciousness, I guess. And so it kind of talks one of the characters into joining with it in a way. And it's very Salvador, it's very weird.
Sounds very Order of the Phalanx.
Yes, actually. And it's like this whole time, you know, the person is tripping because they have to take, like, I think they broke a rib or their arm or something. And so they have to take medication that is making them, like, see things. And so they're you know, this trippy vibe. But then at the same time, the planet is talking to them through their dead friend. And it's like, am I tripping off of this, you know, the stuff that I'm taking? Or is it the planet really speaking to me? And I feel like there's a message there that they were trying to get across that it just did not, it didn't resonate with me. And so while I enjoyed it as a like work of art, I didn't enjoy it as much as I did the other episodes. It was a bit like, you know, was it 2001 Space Odyssey for me? Like it's just, It was a vibe. I guess I had to be high to see it, but I don't know.
It was a vibe.
It was definitely a vibe. I don't know. What did you think of that episode?
That way. I didn't like that one and the God, whatever the military one is, directed by Jennifer Yeah Nelson, unfortunately. I did not like that one.
Oh, that's
it was about a mechanical bear. Yeah.
Kill team
yes.
kill.
Yeah. Kill team kill. That was hilarious, but I'm gonna let you go though.
No, I mean, ain't nothing to say. I'm just, it was too, what, Beavis and Butthead or something? It was just really, it was too silly for me. I was like, okay, like, yeah, America, guns and whatever, boobs and whipping my pee-pee out to pee. Like, I was like, I'm good. That was not a vibe, okay? So the other one was a vibe. But yeah, that's. Those two are definitely not my favorites.
I think I like that one. Well, kind of not in a way. I thought it was like making fun of soldiers in a way. And it reminded me a lot of 80s films where it reminded me a little bit of The Predator, but not like The Predator is a dope film. This isn't like dope on those lines, but it reminded me of that in a sense of like these soldiers go to a place and they get annihilated by this creature. And it's all this, yeah, America, but they look foolish. They look entirely like out of their element, foolish. And it works in terms of like a satire, like in that sense. But I can definitely like in terms of tone, the tone is a little all over the place with it being funny, but then there's like brutal violence right after the funny. And then even when someone dies, it's in a comical way, very dark, comedy or whatever. And it worked for me, but like I can definitely understand why it wouldn't vibe with everybody. It's not a
irony just wasn't, because again, like Three Robots Exit Strategies is full of irony. You know what I mean?
It is.
But I like the way that it's clear. So maybe like it wasn't clear to me that they were like being made fun of. And even if that was the case, I mean, I don't know. I was just like, no, thanks. Like this feels like it should be in a completely different show somewhere. Like, I don't know, this is not telling me anything that I don't already know. I also feel like they do a lot of military stuff and I kind of want them to like ease off that. Like, let's do something else, let's get out of the military, because they've done quite a few. They did a really good one a couple seasons back where the military men were like wolves or something, right? They were,
yeah,
like,
that was cool.
That was good. That was a good one. And then they've just done some I don't know. Anyway, Chow.
It's interesting.
Sorry, Miss Jennifer Yeah Nelson.
That is definitely interesting. And then the last one was Mason's Rats, and I feel kind of torn on this one too, but not necessarily because it was like too heady or whatever. It was more so that like the animation was amazing, and it was. I guess it was well done to a degree, but I almost questioned the point, because I get it. It's Love, Death, and Robots. So as long as you have those three elements in some form of fashion, it works. But with this episode, I was like, what was the point if you're going to befriend the rats at the end? And like, because the whole episode is basically this farmer has a rat problem and he's trying to get rid of the rats. He lives in a future world where there's like all these robots and stuff, but he's a farmer. So most of his tools and stuff are like what we would have today. And he goes in, he wants to kill a rat, and they start shooting like arrows at him. And so he's like, oh, these rats, you know, they know their stuff. They're kind of smart. So let me hire someone. So he gets a guy from like some type of security firm to hire robots to kill the rats. And so they put the first robots in. And it kills the rats. It accidentally kills his cat, which is unfortunate. And after a while, the rats kind of like overcome it. Like they take it out. And so they got to upgrade to get another robot or drone or whatever. They send that in. And the same thing happens up until the point where like the T-1000 shows up. And the rats are not having a good, you know, they're not winning. And he kind of witnesses it, Mason. And he's on their side now all of a sudden. Which... I feel like it's because he respects their ingenuity. He respects their, you know, their will to survive. And, you know, it's like, you know what? This machine is doing too much. Like, I want to get rid of them and kind of keep them off my property, but it's on some, you know, genocidal stuff. Let me go ahead and take this machine out. And then they just sit and drink tea or coffee. And I'm like, really, though? Like, that's, I don't know what I was supposed to get out of that. And maybe I wasn't supposed to get anything. Maybe it was just a cool short that someone put together. But I was like, really, like,
so you know what I'm saying? Come look at this short I put together.
Right? Like,
yeah, come look at this short I put together, guys.
Yeah, and it included death. Oh, I mean.
Right. And there was certainly some robots, you know, and.
And there was the love of your fellow neighbor, which might be the point. Maybe you're supposed to love your neighbor.
Yes, you know, if you kill most of their family members, you'll eventually love them. Yep.
Vibes, I love that for us.
Right, and I'm not saying it has to have like some type of, you know, great message, but I feel like thematically you're trying to convey something that would stand out amongst all of these other episodes, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I looked at the farm based one on the first season and how it was basically a story about survival, where every so often there would be waves of like these alien monsters coming through like a portal, and all the farmers get together, band together just to fight these creatures. It was really freaking cool, and it kind of leaned on family, community, and all these other things, all these different themes wrapped up in the overarching theme of Love, Death, and Robots. With Mason's Rats, it was just like, I guess we just wanted to kill some shit, and I kind of got that from Night of the Mini Dead, but that was hilarious. It was done in a way that was never done before. I've never seen miniature tiny people fighting zombies sped up to like three times the speed of normal. Like, I've never seen that before. Something cool.
So funny.
Mason's Rats, I've kind of seen, I mean, I haven't seen that, but I've seen conflict of this nature. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like,
yeah, I mean, if you've seen Wallace and Gromit for like one second, you know,
right? Like Wallace and Gromit to the extreme. That was, yeah, it's bananas. All in all, though, I do love Love, Death, and Robots. I'm looking forward to, hopefully they continue to keep this up. I know Netflix has been cutting its animation since they've been having, you know, subscriber issues, if you will. I think honestly it's because they have too much content. I really do, because even the good stuff gets swallowed up by everything you don't want to watch. I think that I'm hoping that they continue. I hope that we can get maybe less episodes but longer episodes, something that's a little bit more drawn out, maybe a Love, Death, Robots movie. I want more. Because, you know, we have to wait a year and some change or more for like 9 episodes that are like, what, 15 minutes tops?
That's not cool.
I need you to get together, Netflix.
I mean, come on. It took 6 years to make Arcane. You know how hard this stuff is.
Oh, facts. Ooh. Like, especially with COVID and all that's going on. I totally understand. At the same time, I don't mind it.
He doesn't care. I don't mind it. I don't mind if they give us really quality stuff. If it's 15 minutes and it's really good, like, it makes sense. Because I love shorts. I really, really do. And one thing I love about shorts is that it gives the writer, the artists, the directors an opportunity to do something that they maybe wouldn't be able to do on a large scale.
True, you know, that is true.
And so being able to create a short is, especially when people are doing this in school, they're literally making these short movies and they're so proud of it. They made a 5-minute movie and they know that it took them the whole semester to do it.
Right.
And so I love shorts. I truly appreciate them. So I'm okay if we only get, you know, every season, every year, 6 episodes that are 15 minutes. I mean, like, of course, in my heart, I want more. I'm like, find more artists, find more people. But at the same time, I would rather them give us something really, really good quality and have me yearning for more than them giving us a bunch of stuff and it being like, oh, this was okay. Because we can get that in other shows.
That is facts. That is facts.
Yeah. That is not my scripture. I do understand. I do understand it. Now, when it comes to, I only feel this way when it comes to Square Enix, because they are the bane of my existence. Mm. I have been waiting for Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2. like the rest of us. And I think it is on year three, maybe, I think, since the first game came out. Because I think that came out, like, at the height of COVID as well. I think that came out in March 2020 or something like that. So we are, you know, where is it at, girlies? Okay. And then we've got Kingdom Hearts. Where is it at? Because both of those things have Nomura, Tetsuya Nomura in common. And he said, you know, you won't have to wait so long. And I don't know why we keep trusting that man. But, you know, as far as the TV shows go, I think the most egregious is Stranger Things. But they also, the Duffers said that we don't have to wait so long for season five. So I'm hoping they'll keep that promise. When it comes to Love, Death, Robots, yeah, I think because of how special it is, it's okay. I do think the seasons do need to be longer, like maybe give us like 10 episodes or 12 or something for how long it takes. Don't just give us like, you know, 6 episodes or however many, 8 episodes.
Getting our hopes up. And then also, I also call foul on Stranger Things. I also call foul on anyone who makes a final freaking season and then chops it up into more than one. Like, it's just say 2 seasons then,
fam. The ghetto.
Like, say 2. Don't give me season 4, part 1, season 4, part 2. And then had the nerve to be like, we're still working on the ending of season of the second part. I'm like, you do know the second part starts next month, right? Like, you need to have this done. And granted, I know that they know that. And I understand that these things are hard. So I'm not trying to, you know, make light of any plight they might have. But I'm saying, don't announce some shit and then give us half of it. Like, that's not cool. I see you, The Walking Dead. I see you over there with your 3-part stuff. No, fam.
Mind you. Oh, yeah. They did 3 parts. That's right. I forgot about that. 3
parts. That's basically 3 seasons.
Yeah. What I don't understand is why they decided to choose to go into like that format. Because, you know, like there are a bunch of shows, the network shows, you know, all the network dramas that come on at night. You know, Fox and ABC and stuff. They've been running those formats for years, you know, 22 to 26 episode seasons, mid-season break. You know, it starts in September, goes to November, comes back in January or February or March, and then runs till May or June. I don't know why Walking Dead all of a sudden thought they could do that.
And so the thing is, they've had mid-season breaks before. The problem is that this is the final. Everyone is waiting for it to be done, especially with them announcing spinoffs as we are in this season. Like, don't tell me it's 3 parts. And mind you, they didn't say that when they announced the final season.
Yeah.
As it's getting closer to starting the launch, it's like, oh, we're going to split this in 3 parts. If it's not Game of Thrones, it don't need 3 parts. Okay? Like, it just don't.
And not even that, okay? So
it's just Walking Dead. Like, they don't even need that. Just, like, tell us who dies. Tell us how they get rid of the zombies. And then just end it. Like, stop being annoying.
It's too much. It's too much. And I'm going to watch because I have all the Walking Dead comics. And so I'm like, I'm invested. But at the same time, I'm annoyed at how TV is doing things. Same thing with Attack on Titan. I'm waiting for the second half of the final season. Mm-hmm. Like, just put this shit together. Like, stop it. Speaking of shorts, before we go, if you haven't watched Burrow on Disney Plus, it is a really, really good short. And I believe it was up for an award when it came out into 2020. One of the best.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of animation or just any type of art that doesn't use a lot of words, that just kind of like conveys a feeling or conveys some type of story without having to use words, because I think that that's an art within it of itself. Mm-hmm. And Burrow is amazing at that. Definitely check that out. It's only 7 minutes, but it's really freaking good. That's my recommendation for the week. but yes, I want to thank Destiny for joining us on the podcast. Had a blast. We have to have you back on, definitely. You know, being
thank,
you know
thank
knowledgeable.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Oh yeah, being knowledgeable of all the stuff that we talk about, and just being awesome to talk to you in general. For everyone who's listening out there, if you're listening on YouTube, feel free to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content we have coming out. If you're listening on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, all those different places, feel free to add us to your RSS feed, subscribe, share, tell a friend, tell an enemy, whatever. You never know. They might not be your enemy if you tell them. Tell whoever you need to tell. and share the podcast. We would love to hear from you. Definitely let us know about the content you want us to talk about, whether it's Ms. Marvel, which the first episode is great. Definitely go check that out. Or if it's anime, manga. We haven't talked about manga in a while, mainly because I don't read it.
Because you don't read it.
Sam, listen to me. I have Marvel Unlimited. Got him. I have Marvel Unlimited. I'm catching up on all the Marvel comics, as well as having Crunchyroll, all the anime. I'm not going to be reading it too. I'm just not. Because it's going to piss me off. Because the anime, the fact that the only thing that keeps me going in anime is the fact that I have another anime to look at. The One Piece is in like its 1,000,000th episode. And if I'm going to read the manga and still have to wait for that, I'm going to lose my mind. So I'm not reading it.
Yeah. Read something else. Read other manga. Read manga that doesn't make it to TV. There's really good manga out there that just doesn't get animated.
I'm going to need you to write. Give me a list and I'll check it out. I will certainly check it out. But
Kenny, if it helps, this is something that I do, is if I read things that are only finished, and it pisses my friends off because they're like, there's so many good things that are still ongoing. And I'm like, yeah, but mangas can last like 100 million, like you just said, volumes. And then animes aren't finished. So I literally only F with mangas that are done. Like, so Cells at Work out there, if anyone Cells at Work fan, I love Cells at Work. In six mangas and it ended with two seasons. Okay, they got in, got out. And then my other one is Wotakoi, which is Wotakoi is on Amazon. It's about adults who are into video games and it's really funny.
There you go. I'm gonna make a list. Y'all make a list, send it to me, and I will definitely check it out. That's what I like. I like that ends, okay? We just talk about seasons and the stuff not ending. I like it. What is it? Brotherhood. Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Such a dope anime that ends. It actually ended, and it ended well. Shout out to them, because goodness. Anywho, and not to say that I don't like One Piece. I love One Piece at this point, but you kind of have to after 1,000 episodes. You just have to.
I never did.
I'm not going to read it now. I'm just not. It just, my friends tell me to do so, and I'm like, forget that. Screw that.
I started reading it when it came out. I have the original books, but I stopped buying it because manga's expensive, and then I never watched it when it came on TV.
Yeah, see, I can't. Shout out to Shonen Jump. I'm not doing it. But yes, this has been our show. Again, follow us. You can follow us at TheGameCast1 on Twitter. Feel free to follow. I'm going to have all the follows and all that good stuff below. Before we go, though, Destiny, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
You can follow me at Twitter, at Destiny Dreadful, because I love Penny Dreadful, the show, and I love alliteration. People are like, you think you're dreadful? And I'm like, well, sometimes, but it's mostly because Penny Dreadful. But yeah, I got some cool stuff about Thor, Love and Thunder coming out for the Academy in July. Nice. So if you don't follow the Academy on Twitter or Instagram or all the other things that they do, definitely go ahead and do that.
Awesome. I believe that is it for house cleaning.
Yes, that's it. And of course, this is where I say, wear a mask, wash your faces, your hands, and your butts.
Yes.
Be kind. Stay 6 feet apart. Don't cough on people. Just try not to, at least. Yeah, that's it. I hope to see you guys next week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Bye. Bye.